Everybody ready? Everybody ready? Got your phones turned off and your blueberries, your blackberries. Call to order the House Committee on Human Services on today, Wednesday, April 6th, 8 a.m., and I will open up a hearing on 3570. And Representative Clem. Oh, first we'll have Jennifer and then Representative.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3570 in its original form renames the State Commission on Children and Families to the State Children and Families Commission. It reduces the number of members to the State Commission appointed by the governor to 9. It requires both the state and local commissions on children and families to facilitate collaboration between agencies and partners and advocate for improved outcomes and remove barriers. It redefines the main purpose of local commissions to include preventing child abuse and neglect through community stabilization and strengthening families and reducing the risk factors for failure in school and responding to locally identified needs of children and families. You'll note that we have received a dash 2 and dash 3 amendment on this bill, and I think Representative Clem will be addressing those amendments.
Great. Representative Clem, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, it's a pleasure to be in front of your committee. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21 here in Marion County. So I've also distributed, well, will be distributing here, a summary of the bill, and also I want to direct your attention to, which I believe they'll probably testify, the Association of Oregon Counties had a task force on children and families. They have a variety of guiding principles that, and they spent a lot of time and effort on this, and they have a variety of guiding principles. They'll also, I put on the back page the membership to show you who is on there, a variety of both folks from state and county, both commissions and advocates for children. You'll note line 3 says support House Bill 3570 with amendments, which explains the dash 2. Because without the dash 2s, I'm not sure I would have got the endorsement of the AOC. And one key thing is it no longer tries to mess with the name. It just leaves the name as is, so we don't have to get into any of the letterhead changing business. But more importantly, the key issue for us in Marion County, and you'll notice it's got a lot of Marion County legislators, including one of the co-chairs here on the bill as a co-sponsor. Our commission works, and it works well. And I know both chairs have great relationships with their commissions, and it's important that in the discussions that will be taking place over the next year, we not lose touch of how valuable the local commissions are in leveraging resources, because we have many members of our commission that without that engagement wouldn't be coaxed into giving thousands of hours of free volunteer time and money to these problems, which is key, as you know, especially those of us on Ways and Means, because we don't exactly have all the money in the world to solve all the community ills that face our communities. And these commissions are particularly effective ways to leverage community resources. Now, I know there's been a lot of discussion in the last few years about, you know, the services offered under the umbrella of the Commission on Children and Families and which should be funded directly and which should be still going through the commission. And I certainly believe that some of them it's appropriate to fund directly. That's not a huge issue. But there still is a critical role for the Commission on Children and Families at the county level. And I think, I'm rather silent on the state level. We do change the membership a little bit in the bill. But I do think it has a role as well. I'm here mostly to advocate for the county-based Commission on Children and Families around the state. The language in the bill around shifting their focus and asking for measurable results, particularly on, I think it's page 17 of the dash 2s, talks about the effort, this is new language, the efforts of local commissions must achieve measurable outcomes that can be measured in a consistent manner statewide. The one thing I want to say about other proposals that would shift towards more competitive situations with the counties, I fear that rural counties would lose capacity if there's not at least a minimum available amount of funding like there is under the current formula. And although I represent a Marion County, which has a large urban city in it, I care a lot about the places I grew up and the places where the farms that I care about and the committee I chair are inhabit, and the kids who grow up on those farms and live in those communities need resources as well. And that's my one fear about moving away from sort of a formula that does have some capacity in each county to leverage those additional resources. It also, as you'll notice, in the new language, focuses on child abuse and preventing child abuse and neglect by helping communities stabilize and strengthen families, reducing risk factors for failure in school, and responding to locally identified needs, because they're not the same needs in each community, as we all know. So we've got actually quite a few people here on this bill, so I won't take much more of your time, but it's a bipartisan bill, it's an important bill, and I think it blends with the governor's vision for early childhood programs. So there's a design team, they're meeting, there are multiple members from Marion County's community, both Senator Winters and Sue Miller from our relief nurseries are on that task force, and they and I think believe there is still a role for the commissions even in a redesigned service delivery system. You know, those discussions are going to be taking place over the next year, but there are funding streams that are important for these commissions to continue this year as we have that discussion about what happens in future years. And I'm comfortable that there is a role myself for this local leveraging. There can't be just a state solution, and that's it. There has to be mobilization of local people. And that's all I've got.
Thank you very much. Any brief questions? We have a lot of people coming to testify.
Thank you.
So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 people up to testify. So since we have quite a full agenda, I'm going to ask people to keep their testimony to 2 minutes, if you would, please. So I'm going to start at the top. Yes, that would be great, Representative. Thank you. Oh, Representative Boone, are you here to testify on this?
3260.
Okay, thank you. Ken Hector, Marilyn Harrison, and Allison Kelly, please. Just state your name for the record and just start right in. And as I understand it, colleagues, we're looking at the Dash 2 amendment. I think that replaces the original bill. And Dash 3. Thank you. Yes?
And maybe Randy Franke could be part of this panel. Maybe we can just pull a chair up.
Sure. Randy, are you part of this panel?
Yep.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Co-chair. Thank you.
Ken Hector's never done this before. He was a little nervous.
Oh. Thank you for answering that. Okay. Just introduce yourselves, please, and go right ahead.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair Tomei, Co-Chair Gilliam. For the record, my name is Randy Franke. I'm a Marion County resident. I live at, what is my address? 4472 Hayesville Drive, Northeast Salem, Oregon. I chair the Marion County Children and Family Commission, and here to support the Dash 2 amendments as well as the overall bill. And I guess I want to start off by saying we've submitted a letter, so I'm not going to use my time on doing that. You all can read that at your leisure. But I think the importance of the bill is that it does maintain a place for the Children and Families Commission's local work in each of the communities as we look at what transitions are necessary to reach the governor's goal of improved outcomes in education. I really believe this bill is consistent with those goals and direction. In fact, is, I believe, the work of the local commissions as intended to retained in this bill are critical to the success of the governor's projections and goals. And let me just talk specifically about those. Talks about creating resources in each elementary school catchment area to provide services, sort of what I think we usually call wraparound services for the needs of the children and families. That requires a certain number and development of relationships, not only with the schools, but with the providers, with a host of local community efforts. the Children and Family Commissions, the staff and the volunteers in each of our communities have those relationships already. To lose that resource and to have to redevelop those relationships is time-consuming and costly, and I don't think our children can afford to lose that time. It has taken the system that is now the Children and Families Commission multiple years to develop that. I've been involved since 1989 when it was, the Children and Youth Services Commission. And then we morphed in after the 93 session into the Children and Families Commission. We've been developing these relationships that long. And it's taken time to do that, both with the faith community, with the business community, with neighborhoods, and with nonprofits. And it would just be, I think, a shame and to the detriment of our children to lose those relationships that are going to be so critical to the success of where the governor wants to go with better outcomes for our kids in schools.
Thank you.
Good morning, Co-Chair Tomei and Co-Chair Gilliam and members of the committee. I'm Allison Kelly, and I'm the director of Marion County's Children and Families Commission. For the record, I'm a resident of Polk County. And with Randy, I'll just call your attention to the letter that we have submitted and tell you about that letter. I'm not going to repeat the points that are in it. The letter just states our position that we are here in support of House Bill 3570 as amended, with specifically Amendment 2 really gives you a better focus and captures what the Association of Oregon Counties wanted to see. And so our letter shows that, and it also just gives you a history of how this bill came about and what the key provisions are, why those provisions are important to the state of Oregon. So three quick points. One of the points that we brought out, the statutes that authorize the work that commissions do now were created in the mid-90s and revised a little bit later, and they were there to solve different problems, problems of fragmentation, problems of lack of planning. We do that very differently and very well now. That's not the issue. The issue really is how, as we're hearing from leaders all over the state, leaders in our community and the governor, how do we focus on the results? How do we know that we're going to get to where we want to get? And so I think that's why the language in this bill is important, because it gives a much tighter, more precise focus to the work of local commissions. Why do we care about preventing child abuse? Because we're trying to reduce all the trauma that gets in the way of them succeeding in school. Why do we care about them succeeding in school? Because we want them to succeed in life. We want them to have a lot of we want them to stay in high school, have a lot of options, go to college, become back to their communities, contribute to the communities, the whole thing. So everything that we're hearing from the governor, we're saying, yes, that's connecting those dots is exactly what we want to see. And in this letter, we've given you a couple of examples how we do that with Reading for All. That project is about 4 years old. And that's no small potatoes, because that grassroots literacy project designed to do those things, help those kids succeed in school, got the attention of the Oregon Community Foundation. And they, when they launched their Regional Action Initiative investment strategy in 2008 and 2009, they liked Reading for All and gave us $1 million to enhance it in Marion County and launch it in Polk and Yamhill counties. So that's a pretty significant achievement, and we're getting results. It's not just what we're doing. We're in partnership with the schools, and it's working. So it's just a good example.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Co-Chair Tomei and Co-Chair Gilliam, and members of the committee. Thank you. My name is Marilyn Harrison, and I live in Banks, and I'm the chairperson of the Washington County Commission on Children and Families. I work at Nike as the executive director of their child development program, but I'm not representing Nike today. I'm representing the commission in Washington County. I'm also a citizen who's worked with children and families for almost 40 years, I realized this morning, in Oregon, and so I have a perspective to share there, too. In February, the Washington County Commission looked at what was going on in the various bills that were coming before you, and we adopted three principles that we thought might be helpful in evaluating legislation that relates to the commission system. We've also brought you a packet, a letter and a packet, and there's some nice, colorful examples of measurable outcomes from our county that I'll talk about a little bit. The three principles are, the first one is to continue the work of the local commissions, as my colleagues have said, in building community-based services of systems of support for children, youth, and families. It's there, it works, it is well established, and in Washington County, it is the glue that enables us all to work together on behalf of the children. The second principle is to continue the work of local commissions in focusing on children birth to 18 through the whole of childhood. You don't want to focus so much on one age group that you neglect the fact that children spend a lot of time outside of school hours that needs to be well focused, and also that there's plenty of intervention to be done in the earliest years to make sure children succeed in school. The third principle is to maximize community-based services, maximize that local focus, the local oversight, local community involvement, because that's where people know what the specific needs of that community are. One of the things that we thought we wanted to call out to you was that in Bill 3570, we really think the method of distribution of funding to make sure that there is that that minimum grant so that counties that don't have the large population still have resources that they can use for their young people seems really important.
30 seconds more.
Thank you. Our handout, the handout on Building a Better Future, shows six success stories that our commission has had that are all efforts that we think should be continued. A great example is summer food, where, you know, almost 300,000 meals were served in Washington County to children, and it just couldn't happen without the coordination of the commission.
Thank you so much, and thank you all for your work. It's really appreciated.
Yes.
Appreciated by everybody in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam. Okay.
Thank you.
So we have Ken, who never got to speak, Sam Skillen, and Emily Ryan. And we're going to try to keep you to 2 minutes. But thank you all for coming. And I know after traveling all this way and getting here at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's great to hear you only have 2 minutes to speak. But as you can see, we have a lot of people here. So thank you.
Chair Tomei, Co-Chair Gilliam, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ken Hector. I'm the Director of Community Outreach and Governmental Affairs for Silverton Hospital. I'm also the President of Silverton Together, which is a community progress team of the Marion County Children and Families Department. Here today to support House Bill 3570. I would also like to, as an aside, simply clarify that I did not have a reticence to come up and speak as articulated by Representative Gilliam. I simply wanted to afford him the opportunity to wake up before I got up here so he could appreciate my testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Clem, I think, nailed it when he talked about leveraging resources. And we've been a community progress team since the mid-90s. And the help that Marion County Children and Families Department has given us, both financial and staffing, has enabled us to leverage with both public and private partners to provide the service we do. And our mission is strengthening families. And that's what our progress team does. This bill simply will enhance the opportunity for local commissions and the statewide commission to fulfill its mission by moving to specific and measurable results. We wholeheartedly support it. This is a critical time in Oregon, and we have to, not with all of the other cuts we're seeing in so many areas, we really need to continue to allow local commissions to do their work, to strengthen families, to avoid child abuse. And these are the local solutions. The state can't do it, the county can do it, but working collaboratively, we can continue to be successful. And I thank you.
We like hearing those messages here. Thank you. Okay.
Sure. My name is Sam Skiller, and I live at 1255 Cottage Street, just north of here in the Grant neighborhood. Co-chairs Tomei and Gilliam and committee members, thank you. I'm with the Salem Leadership Foundation. We're a faith-based organization that's been working in the Salem-Kaiser area for 15 years. I am a commissioner with the Marion County Children and Families Commission. I'm also the chair of the North Neighborhoods Community Progress Team, similar to Silverton Together, one of the ways we get the work done in the local areas. I want to share an illustration. My children donated these to me today. These are two magnets. And I thought this illustration might do better than any words I could share. This is the private sector. This is the public sector. okay, made of the same thing. And but there's just something about the public sector and the private sector that made of the same thing, we the people. But there's something just in the history and the naturalness, the natural order of things, makes those two, see, I can't get the magnets to go together, right? What a Children and Families Commission structure does is that. In Marion County, the public sector and the private sector work together like those two ends of the magnet. Good people on both sides with the same intentions for the health and well-being of the community. But the natural order of things does this. A commission helps us do that. Not just, we got to get away from silos. Everybody's heard that. Programs are great. Program providers are great. Single programs that meet the needs in the community. But what we really need is collaboration. And the commission system provides much more than just links and liaisons and committee reports and keeping in touch. No, we are committed partners who have come to know each other so well. As I sat around the table at our last meeting, where else can a ministry guy go and sit in the company of a district attorney, the head of the Department of Human Services, Child Welfare Division, two judges, the county commissioner, the head of the health department, the sheriff and a deputy, the juvenile department, and a school board member. At the same table is a banker, a realtor, a Rotarian, a pastor, a private college regent, neighborhood association chair, nonprofit directors. I mean, we're all at the same table, and not just once in a while to liaison and link. We work together twice a month all the time on doing this. And so I am a big fan of commission structure, not just because I happen to be a commissioner, because I've seen it work. And if the goals are outcomes and reducing barriers, the model that has been pioneered in Marion County, and I think in a couple other counties as well.
And many other counties.
Exactly. So we got to have more of it. We've got to have more of it. Is it appropriate to approach and leave something or not?
Oh, I think so.
I know having 15 copies was the order, but my sons only had two magnets. So thank you for the opportunity. I hope that illustration is illustrative.
That's great. Thank you so much, and thank you for coming to testify. So go ahead.
Good morning, Co-Chair Tomei and Co-Chair Gilliam. My name is Emily S. Ryan. I reside at 420 Southeast Grand Avenue in Portland. I am here as a board member of the Multnomah County Commission on Children and Families, and I am here to support House Bill 3570 as amended. We all know it's important for our children to succeed, not only in school, but in work and in life. And the local commissions really give the opportunities for those children to thrive and eventually contribute positively to their communities, which are also our communities. This bill will also serve as a catalyst for the whole state to achieve better results for all children, youth, and their families. The bill will allow local commissions to address measurable, locally identified needs and really get the community involved with what is important to the children and families. Now, I'm also here to address why this is important to me to approve this bill and send it to the main House floor. And that is, when I was homeless at the age of, let's see, it was 18 or 19, I found the Commission on Children and Families in Multnomah County, and it really opened up a lot of doors for me, and it gave me a broader network. It gave me better skills to network with and to apply to different employment positions, and it also opened up opportunities for me in other portions of my life. While I was on the board, I have graduated from Portland Community College, and I have moved on to attend school at Merrillhurst University to finish my degree. So it really does prove that it has an impact on young people's lives for them to thrive in the communities.
That's great. Thank you for sharing your story. It's wonderful to see someone who has gone through some hard times come and testify before us and show that they're making a success of their lives. So thank you. And thank you all. Thanks to everybody here who is working on commissions and working for these children so that we can provide this kind of outcome. So next we have Emily Ryan. Ryan Albington and Timothy Senator. Am I anywhere close? And Dave Fiskum. I know Dave.
There
Okay, that's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, good morning, members of the committee, and Co-Chair Tomei, and obviously Mr. Gilliam doesn't want to hear what I have to say. No, I'm kidding. My name is Ryan Albritton, for the record. I'm at 1165 Little John Loop, Northwest in Polk County. I serve on the Marion County Children and Families Commission. I work at U.S. Bank, and I'm proud to do so. I'm quite pleased with the new language in this bill, House Bill 3570, as far as drawing accountabilities and outcomes to what it is that commissions do. From a business perspective, as you know, that's something that we deal with every single day. How do we become more efficient? How do we do things the right way? And how do we maximize all of our efforts? Please allow me to bring clarity to our purpose for being here today. And that is one that our commission in particular, and I know most commissions around the state, are about outcomes and accountabilities. In fact, we welcome those with open arms, and we accept them completely. So from a business perspective, I just thought it was good to say that we must look at the roles of commissions as investments and not expenses. And I think that's absolutely important. When you look at developing an employee, when you look at developing people, those are investments. Those are not expenses. And I think that the commissions locally in the state of Oregon do those better than anybody. With this new accountability language and outcomes, I think those are very, very important things for us to focus on. And it's an actionable thing that we've called, I know, in Marion County, for our commission to be actionable, specifically over the last couple of years, and have gotten very, very intentional about doing things the right way. We believe that we can continue to maximize the state's investment by reducing costs, leveraging additional private investment. I think that's important from a business perspective. As you know, and certainly should be aware, U.S. Bank education is very, very important to us in this state. We are one of the largest employers in this state. We employ about 300 people in the Mid-Willamette Valley here, both through our retail channel and also our commercial channels. So focusing on helping students succeed all the way through school will increase the capability of Oregon's workforce and promote more job development and certainly economic growth, which we could all use right now in a very, very desperate way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Tim Sinatra. I'm the my address 5920.
By the way, folks, you don't need to give us your address here. I know, but when you speak before the city council, I think you have to give your address. If you just tell us the city you're from, that would be terrific.
Sure. My name is Tim Sinatra. I'm a Salem resident. Also the executive director for Salem, Marion, Polk Counties, a commissioner here in Marion County, and also the co-chair for the Youth Consortium under the commission here. I'm here in support of the HB 3570. Talk about more of what we're seeing as a nonprofit and the importance of a commission. As a nonprofit, we're having more people show up to our doors every day, the services and so on. And it's important that, you know, in that time when resources are dwindling and the challenges that we're seeing as a nonprofit, that we continue our services and even scale up. The only way to do that is with the opportunity and the strength of a commission where we as the executive directors of nonprofits and agencies that are out there supporting our communities are able to connect efficiently and structure focused, scalable impact opportunities that have been brought to the attention of local communities. We've been able to do that effectively here in Marion County. We're very excited about some of the things we're doing on the Youth Consortium, where we're starting to work with technology to accelerate impact for connecting our agencies together to look at critical needs and be able to move on them immediately, but yet have a long-term sustainable impact. And that's the progressiveness and innovation that this commission here in Marion County and many commissions are doing, and we feel that's key. I've seen also the benefit of that, where we're able to, as a nonprofit Boys and Girls Club, be able to come up with immediate solutions on things that we see for an agency to build capacity so we can serve more, but also as a community. And we wouldn't have that benefit if we didn't have the forum of a commission where we can come together and network together and look at actionable results that will help us achieve what we need to for our communities.
Thank you so much. I think, colleagues, this is one of the things I found so interesting through the years, is how each commission is different. You might have similar goals, but the way you reach those goals are all different, and it becomes the product and the ownership of that community and that commission. So I really appreciate hearing from different commissions and how you achieve your goals. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dave.
Madam Chair, for the record, Dave Fiske. I'm here for the Coalition of County Children and Families Commissions. Your last comment is a good one because I do represent 36 counties, and they're all different, and I've been to many of the counties, and I think the differences are, in fact, an advantage. I appear before you today on behalf of the chair of our coalition, Kevin Stufflebean, who is sick today and couldn't be here, so he asked me to deliver to you the letter I've delivered. I will be very brief and make just a couple, three comments to you. First of all, to use an image, I think the coalition I represent understands that change is in the wind with regard to children and families enterprises. We want to be on the train. We're not sure where the destination is, but we're going to be participating with all of you in developing that change for the benefit of Oregon. Three principles are very important to us. They are listed in the letter. These also are principles that have been adopted by the Association of Oregon Counties, and you will hear from somebody later, perhaps you already have. Continue building community-based systems of support. Continue focusing on school age as well as young children, and maximize community services and increase efficiencies and effectiveness at both the local and state levels. Two points are important. The Democrat leader in the House has said on a number of occasions, Representative Hunt, that the value proposition in the children and families enterprise lies at the local level, and I believe he is exactly right. There are huge resources that some of you are aware of in the form of the commissions, like my colleagues to the left and others who serve on a volunteer basis and who provide a kind of community resource that I hope we won't allow to be lost in the shuffle of the changes as those changes occur in your committee in Ways and Means or as the governor proposes an early learning council. We want to be involved in all of those changes and bring to bear our local expertise, and the commissions around the state will pledge to you their best effort. Thank you for considering the letter we've submitted, and Madam Chair, with your indulgence, this letter will suffice for my testimony on all three bills before you today, if that's permissible. Representative Gilliam, it's also nice to see you, but I'm happy that Representative Cook, Tomei has the gavel today.
Most people are.
Thank you all very
actually,
much.
Actually, can I ask one quick question, Madam Chair?
Yeah, of course.
Actually, Dave, this is for you. Just real quick, since you have all the counties, how well are they at getting back and communicating the successes in the different counties and kind of spreading the word on what's working and what's not working between all the counties to where they're all on the same page and doing the right thing?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, the counties communicate very well together. They meet at least monthly, at least some in person and some on the phone who can't be there. They share, the goal is to share perspectives, share successes, and if you allow me to use this word, share failures so you can learn from a failure and do better. There's a goal for continuous improvement, and I would just add that things work differently on a county-by-county basis. If nothing else, urban and rural are very different. Suburban are different than urban and rural, and I think those distinctives are very, very important, and I would submit need to be recognized by you as you change the children and families programs in Oregon, because rural Oregon is not like urban Oregon in terms of both capacity and the character of the programs. The best trip I ever took in my role as the coalition representative was to Baker County, and I don't go there very often because of distance, but it was really important to see firsthand. I see Representative Thompson here, and we sat together at a Polk County meeting in the evening, and it helps me understand local commissions, but they are very different one by one up to 36.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, gentlemen. We have Stanley Graven, and I think that may be right, Luz Rivera, and Lisa Nato. And again, I'm going to, and I think Mark Nystrom wants to come up with Lisa. But again, please try to keep it to 2 minutes. We have a lot on our plate today. Good morning, and if you'd just introduce yourselves for the record, that would be great. Go ahead.
Who should start?
Oh, go ahead.
Good morning, Co-Chair Tomei, Co-Chair Gilliam, members of the committee. My name is Lisa Nato, and I'm working with AOC. We work to help staff the task force.
Back a little bit. There you go.
We, Commissioner, Congresswoman Darlene Hooley and I were retained to consult with AOC on the task force for children and families, and you have those materials in your packet. I do want to acknowledge the leadership of Janet Carlson in these efforts, and also Jay Dixon and Tammy Beeney, two county commissioners who co-chair the task force. Just to give you a moment of background about myself, I served on the children's care team in the early 1990s and was vice chair on the Children and Families Committee that set up the original commission. So I go back to kind of the birth of this whole endeavor. And we welcome your efforts to renew and refocus the mission of the Children and Families Commission. But I've witnessed firsthand the remarkable work that the local commissions can make in integrating services for children throughout the age spectrum. Some of the principles that we support at AOC are to build on the partnerships and relationships that have been created at the local level between nonprofits, counties, and in partnership with the state. To support children all through early childhood and adolescence. To integrate the services, and we welcome the renewed focus on results and outcomes. When we started, there were so many siloed programs. Our main job was to try to integrate and get everybody moving in the same direction. Now is the opportunity, as we have more data and research about the success of programs, to build on what we've learned and really take it to the next level. Innovation is something that the local commissions can provide that you can't always do in a large state system. It can recognize the needs of the local community and that not one size fits all in this state. And finally, we can leverage the private nonprofit and build on the human capital that exists in all our community to involve more people in the efforts to raise healthy children.
Thank you
for your work.
Co-Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I'm Mark Nystrom. I'm the Human Services Policy Manager for AOC. Just wanted to reiterate that we do support the House Bill 3570 and that I staff the AOC CCF task force, and so that if there's any questions regarding the document that you received or any information from the stance of AOC, I'm here to answer any questions or will be around for a resource. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Good morning. I'm Stan Graven. Live in Dallas, Polk County. I'm in Representative Thompson's district. Relatively new to Oregon. Been here 4 years. I still teach at the University of South Florida. I teach brain development and early development in children, which we've done for some 25 years. I directed a program for Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for 9 years, which unfortunately meaning it, that we had the 45 worst counties in the nation in terms of infant outcome to see if we could develop what you already have in Oregon, which is a community group and a commission which could address the obvious issues that had to be addressed if you're going to improve their outcome. What I find is that in Oregon, most people have grossly underestimated what a very unique system this is. And I think the bill, as I've read it and as I'm looking at it now in times of austerity, it is absolutely essential that local groups who would like to do lots of things must focus on those things that are most critical. They have to utilize the coalition of their resources, which I find everywhere I look now is, in fact, happening. And now the concept, which is also creeping into medicine, fortunately, is that you need to use evidence-based practices and you need data to measure outcome so that you can tell people what you think you, in fact, accomplished. My wife and I spent 7 years working with a school district in Alaska to see if we could help them with their children become ready for kindergarten. So you can make a difference. We know that. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your involvement here. You are just a treasure that have in Polk County and in our state, especially with your interest in early childhood development. So thank you for your work here and being willing to volunteer on a commission.
Thank you, Reverend Tomei. Yeah.
You can't have him.
I put stars on your name. People have been contacted.
I know what you're up to.
Thank you all very much.
Co-Chair Tomei, Mark and our testimony also would apply to 3256.
So. Okay. Thank you so much. All right. Thank you all. Luz Rivera? Is there such a person? Am I just making that up?
I think she had to leave.
Okay. All right. Lynn Martin and Eric Johnson and okay, great. That's it. I think that'll be it for today. Unless, is there anybody else who intended to sign up to testify on this bill? Okay, come on up. Great. All right, so our timekeeper is working here. 2 minutes. Start fast.
Start with me?
Yes, sir.
Hello, thank you for allowing me the time to come and speak. My name is Eric Johnston, and I'm the executive director of a nonprofit in Clackamas County and the founder of Todos Juntos. And I'm here to advocate for supporting the local children, youth, and family divisions. And in addition to early childhood services, I'm here to advocate for maintaining community school and other after-school programs aimed at middle school and high schools. I've been in the trenches since 1994 in rural Clackamas County, and I've written something out to briefly to kind of explain why I think it's important to maintain Children, Youth, and Families Division. Todos Juntos is a nonprofit that has maintained quality services for Clackamas County youth and families and has a long history of innovation and responsiveness for effectively meeting the needs of children and families in Clackamas County through a unified family and community system of care. Todos Juntos offers multiple programs in the county across school age groups. Todos Juntos serves over 1,000 youth and families, adding vital supports and services within neighborhoods throughout the county by providing high-quality prevention and intervention programs for youth and families. Our 40 staff have more than 65 years of collective experience working with youth and families. 15 of our staff are bicultural and fluent in English and Spanish. We currently provide community school programming called PreventNet in 5 communities, as well as diversion programming in 6 communities. The Clackamas County Children, Youth, and Families Division was instrumental in forging the PreventNet model and then identified and merged additional resources for more comprehensive community-based service delivery. I hope that funding for Children, Youth, and Families Division has continued as it has brought together essential partners and has acted as a hub of planning that has proven effective impacting the lives of Clackamas County residents at a substantially lower cost.
Thank you.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Chairman Gilliam and Tomei and members of the committee. My name is Lynn Martin, and I'm the Senior Director for Program and Fund Development for Northwest Human Services, which is based here in Salem. Northwest Human Services operates many programs, but one of them is our Host Youth and Family Program, which provides shelter and services for homeless, runaway, and abandoned youth ages 11 to 17 in Marion and Polk counties. A major part of the HOST program includes the provision of parenting, education, and mediation, family mediation services designed to strengthen families and support the return of youth to the parental home. And to that end, I'm here today to ask you to support House Bill 3570-2, which specifically addresses issues related to the stabilization and strengthening of families to prevent and reduce issues, child abuse and neglect. And to do that through the local commissions, the established local commissions. In so many cases, we see families that have fractured due to economic stressors, drug or alcohol abuse, poor parenting skills, which often just exacerbates conflict with adolescents, and other stressors that result in youth either leaving home of their own accord or being removed by the foster care system, consequences neither of which are ideal. We also know that local collaboratives work best. And as Mr. Frankie noted earlier, the existing commissions have developed strong relationships with local organizations like ours and the community at large to develop and implement solutions to local problems. Youth on the streets are at risk for exploitation and physical violence. We see this all the time, every day in our program. Delayed completion of school and potentially a lifetime of homelessness. And those in the foster care system may or may not fare better overall, but at an enormous cost to the state, we know. In fact, both results are quite costly to the state and to society at large.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Sorry, we had to cut you short. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Co-Chair Tomei, Co-Chair Gillian, and the committee. I appreciate you allowing me a minute to speak. My name is Rex Hagans, and I'm the Vice Chair of the Clackamas County Commission on Children and Families. I have spent, seems like a lifetime, I guess it is, working in behalf of children, particularly children and families. I've worked in the education system. I've become a full-time volunteer since I retired 10 years ago, and I've been with the commission system for at least 6 years now. And I just want to say that I believe Representative Clem has it exactly right. I have not had the experience in my career anywhere of seeing such effective leverage and the ability to build collaborative relationships at the local level. So I urge you as we move forward to preserve the local commissions on children and families. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for your testimony. Thank you all for your work. And the state would not be the same without you here.
Amen.
Thank you. With that, I will close the public hearing on, 3570. And open up, pardon? And I will carry over the work session on House Bill 3570. Okay, and I'm going to open up a public hearing and a possible work session on 2183. Jennifer.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2183 makes a knowingly false report of child abuse to the Department of Human Services or a law enforcement agency a Class A misdemeanor punishable by a maximum of 1 year's imprisonment, $6,250 fine, or both. We do have a subsequent referral to judiciary, and a fiscal statement was issued only for the purposes of moving to judiciary. A more detailed analysis will be provided at that time in judiciary.
Okay, and I think there was an amendment, but I'm not seeing it, but we will, we won't be able to look at this amendment on this chamber, but we'll hope that it will be looked at in judiciary. There are several people who want to testify on this. We have Mark McKechnie, Roger Williams, Pamela Butler. That's all. We'll take that first. Oh, did I lose Mark?
Yeah, Mark, we'll be back at 9:30.
Okay, come on.
Oh,
yes, that's, oh, okay. Thanks. All right. As you can see, we have a full house, so we're going to, again, try to keep our comments short. So, again, sir, go ahead.
Co-Chairs Tomei and Gilliam and committee, my name is Roger Williams. I'm the legislative coordinator for the Oregon Christian Home Education Association Network. I'm here to support the bill. The key to the bill is, and I quote, is that these reports are, and I quote, knowing that the report is false, unquote. In other words, these reports are not made in good faith. These reports will divert Department of Human Services efforts from real child abuse cases, and it will cause innocent people to be falsely accused. DHS cannot ignore these false reports, but it must at least screen them, and it will likely result in ordeals for families that are innocent. We support the bill.
Much. Okay, Mark, go ahead.
Co-Chair Tomei, Co-Chair Gilliam, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark McKechnie. I'm the Executive Director of Youth Rights and Justice, formerly Juvenile Rights Project. Our concern with this bill simply is that the proposed penalty for making a false report of abuse is greater than the penalty, more severe than the penalty for mandatory child abuse reporters for failing to report. So those of us who are mandatory and those of you who are mandatory child abuse reporters will face somewhat of a dilemma where you will have to weigh what the amount of information you have and face a potentially worse consequence if you make a report that turns out to be false and be in a position that you did not do so knowingly or in bad faith, versus failing to uphold your obligations as a mandatory child abuse reporter and make the report. And I think at the very least we would like to see this bill amended so that the potential penalties for both failing to make a report as a mandatory reporter or knowingly making a false report are the same, so that people can make a decision whether to report based on their own good faith and the facts rather than a calculus of which penalty is worse for which action. And that's our main concern with this bill. Thank you.
Mark, you sent us materials. Just pointed out to me, it's House Bill 2459. And we'll hear that later if you wanted to come back on that.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was out of the room. I didn't okay. hear the bill number that was called. I only heard my name, but I quickly figured out which bill we were talking
about.
So
got it.
After I submitted
we'll hold
the
this
testimony.
For the next bill.
Madam Chairman, can I ask a question?
Of course.
Is there a problem? I mean, I know it's a theoretical problem, but is it an actual problem? Do we have a bunch of, are we swamped by false reports of...
Co-Chair Tomei, Representative Greenlick, I'm not sure about the Oregon stats, but I know nationwide this is a serious problem.
Well, Madam Chair, we live in Oregon, so we're not passing national legislation. So my question still stands: does anybody have any evidence that we're being swamped by knowingly false reports of child abuse? My tendency is to get people to report. So I think anything that sort of chills the notion that people are willing to report is a problem to me. But the question is, if we have a serious problem, if we have 500 cases a year, 200 cases a year, some number, or is this entirely theoretical?
Representative Greenlick, the Department of Human Services on their I don't have the exact figures, but the Department of Human Services on their website has the breakdown of reports, how many were just screened as not even going past the screening process, and those that were investigated but not found guilty, if you would, and then those that are guilty. You might ask them if they have if they keep records of reports that are obviously false once they get into the screening process.
Madam Chair, if I may follow, I spent 2 days sitting on the child abuse hotline listening to reports, and they were all difficult reports, and some of them were followed up and some of them weren't followed up, and I thought every single one of them was important that people do it. So I just wonder where this bill came from. I mean, I had never heard of any problem of us being swamped by knowingly false reports. And
well, Representative, there are several other people who
okay,
come
great.
To testify, so maybe we'll hear more.
Excellent.
And it will be heard in a more thorough venue on in judiciary, and it was Representative Krieger's bill. But he just wanted it heard first here, and we will send it immediately to judiciary. So I will get back to let you know.
That means that vote's already been decided. We're not debating that vote, because I'd vote against sending it to judiciary, unless there's some real reason to send it to judiciary. So, I mean, unless it's been determined that we are sending it to judiciary, I mean, they only meet 5 days a week and have about 400 bills in front of them, so...
Well, why don't we hear the testimony,
Then
we will have a vote about whether or not to send it to judiciary, and we can decide then. Very quickly, if you don't mind.
Actually, it's to follow up with Representative Greenlick. As a father of four boys, and they like to wrestle and fight, I actually had a report when my boys were out wrestling in the yard, and it was pretty devastating to my wife when the police showed up, and it was a false report, even though it didn't go anywhere at that point, and the officer was able to sort it out. I can imagine if it had went any further, it would have destroyed my wife. And I would hate to see a false report knowingly someone, and that's the key, it's knowingly filing a false report. You can mess up somebody's life really fast by doing that. So I'm actually find myself supportive of this bill.
Thank you. We're going to continue. Oh.
And, If there are no other questions, I'd like to excuse myself. Thank you.
No, that's fine. Thank you for coming today.
Yeah, really briefly, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Pamela Butler. I'm a policy associate with Children First for Oregon, and I am here in opposition of House Bill 2183. From the perspective of a child is what Children First represents, and there are over 71,000 calls that come into DHS, and at the moment, I can nearly guarantee, I know there are representatives here, that they don't know how many are false, and it, like Mark McKechnie said, creates a real dilemma for mandatory reporters on when to report and when to not. And I think for the small amount of times where it is a completely false report, knowingly false report, is so small that you're risking the lives of thousands of children that are at risk, for those people who decide not to make the call because they're afraid of the consequences. And at the base level of citizens of Oregon and the communities that I've worked with, all they're going to hear from this bill is, if I make a call and someone doesn't like it, I could go to jail for a year and pay a $6,000 fine. So people aren't going to make those calls. So as an advocacy organization looking at the children's safety only, we would be opposed to this bill as it stands.
Thank you very much. You. Elizabeth Kushwa, Robert Dedrill, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, Eva, and I won't even try that one. And Amanda Marshall is going to be last. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Kushwa. I'm the executive director of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. As the bill stands, the district attorneys are opposed to the bill. We're opposed to the bill for one really good reason, in that we already have a law that covers a false reporting. And my testimony will attached to my testimony is a copy of 166025, 1 sub F, which is when you get the testimony at the top of the right-hand column. There is a crime of initiating and circulating a report knowing it to be false concerning an alleged or impending fire, explosion, crime, catastrophe, or other emergency. Obviously, child abuse would be considered a crime in this. This is a B misdemeanor. The other reason we are concerned about carving out this particular crime from this is that this could have a very chilling effect, as the Representative Greenlick mentioned, on reporting. When abusers do abuse children, they threaten them, they threaten other custodial parents, saying no one will believe you. And not only will we say that no one will believe you, but now no one will believe you and they can throw you in jail for it. And so it's just one more tool that's specific to that crime. I have spoken to Representative Krieger about this. We'll have further discussions if the bill does move to judiciary. But as the bill stands, the district attorneys are not in support of the bill.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
And Chair Tomei and Chair Gilliam and members of the committee, thanks for your time today. My name is Eva Ripito, and I am here representing AFSCME's Licensed Child Care Providers, Local 132. As providers, they're mandatory reporters, so we're certainly supportive of protecting children because it's their job. I'm here to say that we're supportive of the idea of making sure that false reports of child abuse are considered a crime, because when a false report is made when any report of child abuse is made against a child care provider, it goes through screening just like any other report. And if it makes it through the screening, it goes into investigation. At the time of investigation, that provider is shut down. And then their license is pulled for the duration of the investigation, so they're not working. We've had some providers without work for a long time through investigation periods. So unfounded doesn't mean not guilty, unfortunately, but if it's not even an actual claim, or, you know, actual abuse, then it becomes a problem. So we need to find that fine line of protecting providers who are providing a service in good faith and protecting our children and making sure that they're allowed to work. We recently had a provider that had a call of neglect against her because the child usually had yogurt after the nap time, and a substitute provider had given the child yogurt before the nap time, and created a problem. Fortunately, the licensing agent knew of some underlying issues going on in the facility, but because it was under investigation, they had to be shut down for the day. So it was resolved pretty quickly, fortunately. But
Thank
we would
you.
Just like to have some sort of conversation.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For
we will further
Madam Chair.
Quickly.
Because this is a serious issue, and I'm glad Ask Me actually came up with that scenario. I'm just wondering, since we have the DAs up here, Elizabeth, I mean, I thought there was something in place. That's why I was surprised to see this bill. But what would trigger it, or how would you go about it now? Because in the instance that I had, we had a neighbor lady, husband passed away, and she was mentally unstable, so I understood the situation was just devastating to my wife when the police show up and it's the boys out fighting, and the officer knew before he got to the door because they were still wrestling in the front yard at that point. But how would you go about initiating this process if you had one brought against you? Because it seems like the people that are having these false claims, they're drugged through a ringer to prove themselves innocent. And it's pretty devastating to a family. And sometimes children are removed and then brought back. And that causes a lot of turmoil and trauma and disruption in a family. And we need to prevent that from happening. But I understand we want to make sure everybody's reporting child abuse as well. If the DA sat down and came up with a good way to do this.
Co-chairs, Representative Widener, we believe we are functioning that way now. We have, to also going back to Representative Greenlee's comments, there are quite a lot of reports of this kind of thing in divorce proceedings, for example. And what happens is that law enforcement and district attorneys are very savvy at figuring out fact from fiction. They do this quite often, and there would be a standard investigation for any claim like this. But it's usual, under most circumstances, it's far more obvious than you might think. In addition, the statute of limitations for misdemeanors is 2 years. So if something like this came about later and you had thought about it, you could go back and have a charge of this misdemeanor within a two-year period. This new crime would not change that statute of limitations period because it would elevate it to a misdemeanor. It would still remain a misdemeanor. So the only difference would be the carving out of this particular crime from other crimes of false reporting and elevating the penalty, which would be additional jail and financial sanctions.
Representative, you've asked great questions, and we'll have a more thorough hearing in judiciary. I'm on that committee, and I will make sure that your questions get asked. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So when you have, though, a case of a false reporting, and you find that somebody really did, I mean, and you talk about the notion of having to do this investigation and process, I mean, for that particular language that we already have, I mean, it seems to me that there's a huge cost and burden involved in trying to ferret that out. I mean, are we recouping our costs and our time when you've got these folks who are false reporting? Because I've seen this happen in a lot of, I think it happens more often than what we actually realize. But are we actually making sure that in that process when we do have the false reporting and this triggered by the current law, that we're actually, that it's an appropriate fine, punishment, what have you, versus what this bill does?
Co-chairs, Representative Parrish, I believe so, and I believe so because for any case of a false report, you have cases that are substantiated reports, and you have to investigate every report. There's just no question. You can't say, well, we don't think maybe this is a false report, maybe this person has other, you know, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't out to get you. So I think in some cases like that, you have issues where it's absolutely substantiated and you have to go through the investigation in every instance.
Thank you, Elizabeth. We're going to be moving on. We have Amanda Marshall.
Good
Good morning, Chair Tomei, Chair Gilliam, members of the committee. I'm Amanda Marshall. I'm the attorney in charge of the Child Advocacy Section at the Oregon Department of Justice, and our section represents DHS Child Welfare in all matters. And I am a resident of Yamhill County, who also has three boys who fight. I've got a little different
all boys
take on
fight.
Members of the committee, the concerns that the department has are very similar to the concerns that were expressed by the representative from the ODAA. I would point out that in addition to 166, 162375 has created the crime of initiating a false report, which certainly also would apply to these cases, and that creates a C misdemeanor offense if a person knowingly initiates a false alarm or report which is transmitted to fire department, law enforcement agency, or other organization that deals with emergencies involving danger of life or property, which arguably would be DHS. The concerns I have were also expressed by Mark from JRP in terms of the chilling of child abuse reporting. I personally teach the CLE for lawyers on mandatory reporting of child abuse. I teach that CLE about four times a year, both to members of the private bar associations throughout the state, the Criminal Justice Association, and internally at the Department of Justice. And I can tell you that the number one thing I get from teaching that CLE is that mandatory reporters, lawyers specifically, are looking for any reason not to make a report of child abuse. People are nervous, they're scared, they're very concerned about the consequences of making a report, and a lot of the time that I spend talking to these attorneys about why they should make a report is in response to questions they have about what consequences they would face if their report were proven to be false, even though they acted in good faith. Unfortunately, the knowing requirement doesn't necessarily calm people's concerns that they may be investigated or falsely prosecuted or falsely accused of making a false report of child abuse. I think in the example given by Representative Wiedner, what I took away from it was that the system worked perfectly, which was that a neighbor made a report because they had a concern. Law enforcement came out and did an investigation, and there was no intrusion into Mr. Wiedner's family based on the fact that no abuse had happened. And that's what the Department of Human Services does every day. Representative Greenlick talked about sitting on a hotline, and that's been my experience working with the department, is that they get thousands of reports and they are able to do effective screening. If you look at their website on the DHS dashboard, you'll see that there is a very small fraction of reports that come in that lead to protracted investigation, much less finding that the abuse or neglect was founded in an intervention into that family. So I would argue that the system that we have in Oregon is doing its job and working well. The main concern is about elevating this to an A misdemeanor, a crime punishable like a DUII, like a sex abuse 3, by a year in jail, when a mandatory reporter can shirk their responsibility and only face an A violation and a $500 or $750 fine. And also elevating it out above the level of a false report of any other crime that's committed in the state of Oregon. So if I call the police and make a false report of a murder or a fire, that penalty would be less than the false report of child abuse. And I think the state's interest in making sure that people make reports would outweigh the state's interest in trying to combat a problem that I'm not sure exists.
Thank you. Very quickly.
I just need to say this, if you don't mind. Thank you, Madam Chair. There are some folks who have come to me who have found themselves in that limbo where their false report has come in. It has been investigated. It has been very clear that they have been cleared, but their families are in fact disrupted by it. They have their kids at that particular time of the report were taken away, and as a result, and they were traumatized, quite frankly. I am curious, and I'd like to work with as many people as possible on this, because I also see this fine line that I'm really concerned about, where we need to have people reporting, and if they aren't reporting, and if this stops them from reporting, then I don't want to see that take place. But there are, I can give you some examples of people who have had some significant problems, and the two-year component of being able to investigate or have it be something on the record and yet changed does not help. They are the family itself is traumatized. So please, at some point, we need to talk about
that. Okay. Thank you, Representative Frederick.
Thank you. I'm sorry. We don't have time for any further questions. I'm sorry. But we will hear these same issues in judiciary, and I'll make sure that your questions are answered.
Thank
there.
You.
Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2183 and open up the work session on House Bill 2183.
Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2183 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Judiciary by prior reference.
Chair Gilliam moves House Bill 2183 without recommendation as to its passage to the Committee on Judiciary by prior reference. Any discussion? Sounds like we have a lot of discussion.
I'll just say this if you don't mind. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenlee brought up a good point. We don't want to have... how they say it, solutions looking for the other way around. Problems looking, which way is it?
Solutions looking for problems.
But I would ask that the individuals, because I know you're going to take care with this in judiciary, particularly Ms. Kushwa and our representative from the judiciary, help us with the figures in Oregon. And I know it's a gray area because if it's unsubstantiated, that doesn't mean it was an unfounded or a malicious report. But help us with those figures so that you all know a little more about what the problem is in Oregon. I can't answer the question, but I think it's a valid one, and I hope you'll look at that in judiciary.
Thank you, Representative. Okay, we're going to, let's see, there was no amendment. So, clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Greenlee.
No.
Representative Parker.
No.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
No.
Wow.
Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Tomei?
Aye. I think we got the majority right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I know it's a tough issue. Sorry that we had such short shrift. I'll try to make sure that doesn't happen again. Okay. So, do we have any legislators here that I should be hearing? Okay, and we're going to be carrying over House Bill 2600. I should have announced this earlier, and I hope nobody is here for these. 3482, 2235, and 3434. Do I have them all? Okay, and what am I going to open? I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3260 and what else?
3256.
And House Bill 3256. Representative Kotek, are you here? There she is. Jennifer, do you want to go ahead?
Sorry. Did you open 3260?
Sorry?
Did you do 3260?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3256 changes the membership of the State Commission on Children and Families to 13 members appointed by the governor. Additionally, modifies membership makeup to add 5 ex officio non-voting members. Charges State Commission with promoting best practices at state and local levels to prevent child abuse and neglect and juvenile crime. Direct State Commission to develop and administer competitive grants to local commissions to prevent child abuse and neglect and juvenile crimes. Direct State Commission to develop performance measures and outcomes. Requires Governor to appoint, subject to Senate confirmation, Director of State Commission on Children and Families. Limit State Commission personnel budget to 10% of the total Commission budget unless otherwise approved by the Commission. Requires the Commission to report to the Governor and Legislative Assembly on or before October 1 of each odd-numbered year. Report shall include performance measure progress and outcomes developed, proposed solutions to barriers, and proposed prioritization of federal and state resources to implement identified solution. And 3260, sorry, let me get that really quick. House Bill 3260 requires the State Commission on Children and Families to contract with a nonprofit entity to establish, coordinate, and deliver support services for runaway and homeless youth and their families, permits the nonprofit entity to seek local, state, federal, public, and private funding to carry out the provisions of runaway and homeless youth support services, and there is a Dash 1 amendment to 3260.
Okay. Good to see you, Representative.
Nice to see you, too. Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. Tina Kotek, State Representative.
House District 44, North and Northeast Portland. Let me just start off with House Bill 3260 and the Dash 1 amendments. This is a bill related to runaway and homeless youth that is a program and funding that is currently in the State Commission on Children and Families. I want to express my support for the concept behind House Bill 3260. This bill comes out of a discussion during the interim that was a response to a Blue Ribbon Task Force that was called for in a budget note in 2009, where the State Commission and its members and local commissions looked at their system and made some recommendations, one of which was to explore the idea of the runaway and homeless youth funding and program oversight be moved to a different entity. The Dash 1 amendments would support moving the funding as well as the programmatic oversight to the Department of Human Services. I think that is a good move in the terms of connecting that system of supports to supports for foster youth, many of whom sometimes leave the system and to be homeless, and I think that's a good connection. I've spoken with the department. I look forward to hearing their testimony on the Dash 1. I don't think it's quite right, not that the intent's not there. The one concern I might have is making sure we don't put an undue fiscal burden on the department right now in terms of taking over this program, providing oversight, so maybe just tweaking a little bit. I think the Dash 1 just takes the current statute and moves it to DHS, so that might need a little work, so I look forward to hearing what the department's response is. And all I would say, I think this is an important program that we fund in the state. It has about 200,000 in general funds, 600,000 in federal funds. At this point, I don't think we have a decision whether or not we can fully fund or fund at all that program, but I think this programmatic discussion and policy discussion of what's the proper home is absolutely necessary, and I hope that you'll be able to amend the bill and move it to Ways and Means so we have that option in the subcommittee to discuss a different fiscal home and oversight home for the program. So on House Bill 3256, first off, I want to say that, to quote Kevin Stoffelbeam's letter that Dave Fiskum talked about earlier in the other commission bill, the ultimate goal is what's best for our children and families in our communities. And so 3256 was an attempt to put together a whole series of conversations that happened in the interim about the State Commission on Children and Families and the local commissions. As you saw in the summary of the bill, it does a variety of things. It became clear over the interim with encroaching budget problems that we really had to take a look at the State Commission system and say, how do we target what they're doing and really get a handle on their overall mission, because it had really grown to a lot of different things. So 3256 started off as a attempt to say, let's really focus in on abuse and neglect and juvenile crime prevention, those prevention efforts, because there are funds for that. It's a strong part of the system. You'll see a change in the commission structure to reflect that. There was an attempt in the bill to talk more about performance measures and outcomes and moving funding streams to competitive grants versus a formula, and then also capping administrative costs. So it was an attempt to kind of do a systematic restructure a little bit to really reflect where we are budgetarily, but keeping the value of the system. What I'd like to talk about now, though, is slightly different. Since the bill was drafted, the governor came out with this Early Learning Council proposal. And as you know, that means moving sometime during the biennium, the resources and oversight of the $0 to $5 in the state to the Early Learning Council. I'm on the Early Learning Design Team. The goal is to have a legislative proposal for the short session next year to implement that in the second half of the biennium. I think there's a lot of support for the high-level objectives of that initiative, and I fully expect there will be some change there. With that in mind, the governor's budget currently looks at a status quo type of arrangement for the State Commission on Children and Families for the first half of the 11-13 biennium. The co-chairs of the Education Subcommittee and the Human Services Subcommittee of Ways and Means have been talking about this. We haven't quite figured out what that means budgetarily. But given the changes in the air, House Bill 3256 no longer seems relevant, because it doesn't make much sense if all or parts of the State Commission system will be moving to the Early Learning Council with a very specific focus on 0 to 5. So the question, what is the future of the State Commission in the Early Learning Council structure? What's the role of the local commissions in that structure? With these questions in mind, I'd like to propose more immediate and aggressive changes to the commission system that are in alignment with the future of the Early Learning Council. These ideas are meant to jumpstart a discussion that we need to have right away so we can finish a budget before we adjourn in June. But this is more than a set of budget decisions. It's about prioritizing our resources and moving us down a path to a clear focus on outcomes-based 0-5 system that supports Oregon's most at-risk children and families. And I apologize for some of the stakeholders in the room. I think it's taken me a while to put all these ideas into a form that made some sense even in my head. I've spoken to the co-chairs of the Human Services Subcommittee about this concept. While I think we all have consensus that we need to do something dramatic, I just want to point out to those listening and to the committee that we don't know all the details. So keep that in mind as you hear my suggestion. So instead of House Bill 3256, as introduced, I now suggest the following. Eliminate the functions of the State Commission for Children and Families by October 1st of this year and direct the appropriate level of funding and position authority to the Early Learning Council for the second half of the biennium. Allocate a minimum level of basic capacity to the local commissions for the first half of the biennium, holding the dollars for the second half of the biennium in a special purpose appropriation with release of the funds contingent upon the outcome of the next item that I'm going to read. Item number three, require the local commissions to create and propose a plan of how they will repurpose their activities to be part of the Early Learning Council system and bring those changes to the short section next year in relation to the Early Learning Council changes. Number four, transfer the 0-5 program funds and oversight to the Early Learning Council administrators, such as Healthy Start, Relief Nurseries. Number five, transfer the youth-related programs and their oversight to a new Youth Success Council or Youth Supports Office, something like that, within the Governor's Oregon Education Investment Board structure. So while we would have an Early Learning Council for 0-5, we could also have a Youth Support Office for those youth investment dollars and juvenile crime prevention dollars that currently sit in the State Commission. And lastly, transfer other population-specific programs, funds, and oversight to other agencies. CASA and Runaway and Homeless Youth would be the two particular ones currently sitting within the State Commission. Again, this is an attempt to jumpstart a conversation that we need to have. I've talked to a lot of members on both sides of this building about where they want to go. I think there's consensus for incentivizing the local commissions to become part of the Early Learning Council system. With the Early Learning Council and the divvying up of funds to different places, it doesn't make sense to have a state commission for the first half of the biennium. In the resource-constrained environment that we live in, we need every dollar to be focused on ways to help children and families in a different way as we move to a new system structure. So this is preliminary. I think many people will find it not completely fleshed out, but I assume we'll be having a work group on this to talk about it, and I hope that you'll be able, I know your schedule is very busy and it's very late in the session, but if you can entertain at least another public conversation about this and move this bill as a vehicle to have continuing conversation either in the Rules Committee or the Ways and Means Subcommittee, that would be very helpful. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
So, Representative, your wish would be for us to have another public hearing other than today and then eventually to move it either into Rules or Ways and Means?
Madam Chair, it would be, but I also recognize your schedule. If that seems too daunting or that might be difficult to do, I understand because we're getting to the last several weeks of the committee. However, I do think that to the fullest extent possible, we should be having these kind of policy conversations in the policy committees and moving whatever bill worked at whatever level onto the subcommittees in Ways and Means. That's why I suggest maybe a skip through the Rules Committee if you don't have the time to get through it all. But you've been hearing a lot of testimony. You heard testimony this morning about the pros and cons of the commission system, mostly pro. There's a lot of value in that system. I don't think anyone's saying there's not. There's a new day. We're looking at refocusing our efforts on 0-5 in the Early Learning Council. We need to understand how that what that means for the State Commission. And this is a good place to have the conversation. It would be nice to have done it earlier, but honestly, I think we were still wrapping our heads around what the Early Learning Council proposal really meant. And so I think it's really what time you have to give to it would be great.
Right.
Thank you.
We certainly heard some wonderful testimony today about local commissions and all the great work they've been doing over the years. And I would imagine some of these folks who might still be here are hearing this proposal for the first time.
They
and
are.
I would imagine they would be having a lot of gut reactions to what they're hearing. And I'm seeing some people in the committee itself
So I will entertain a couple of questions. As you can see, the agenda is still full, and I'm going to move on. And what I would like to do with the position of the co-chair is to have a further hearing. It seems to me this is the right place to hear these issues rather than rules or in the ways and means, even the ways and means on human services. So, Representative, I see that I assume that's a signal that you'd like to speak.
Very quickly, since you obviously are in charge of rewriting this bill, and I applaud that effort, would you give some consideration to the part in there that talks about competitive grants? And the reason I say that in this kind of a thing is I've served on a number of review committees, and competitive grants in these kinds of county-oriented situations tend to flow to the counties that have the better resources or the hired gun grant writer that really produces a blue ribbon grant, and the smaller, lesser funded, you know, less resource deficient counties tend to get left off in the background, not because their idea wasn't any good, but the presentation of it wasn't very good. And this kind of stuff, I think it might be worth our time to look at a granting formula for funds as opposed to competitive grants.
Madam Co-Chair and Representative Thompson, thank you for the question. I think
sure it was a question, but you can answer it anyway.
Well, on the competitive grant aspect, I think that was a response to some concerns that have been raised about really measuring the outcomes and connecting the funding to outcomes at the local commissions. I think we have some very high-functioning local commissions, but there have been issues around how do we actually quantify the success we're having, and how we do that in the rest of the nonprofit sector is people compete for money. Right now, we have a standardized formula that basic capacity and other dollars flow to the local commissions, and so that was an attempt to get at that. If we were going to keep working on that bill per se, I'd be open to entertaining other language there. I think as we look at the Early Learning Council structure, however, I think it's very unclear at what level, if local commissions were to stay a part of that network, and I think there is value in the local commissions playing a part, what kind of funding they would be receiving outside of basic capacity is very unclear. And so I think how that mechanism for funding would be set up would also be, I think, depend on what dollars would actually flow to the commissions at that point. So thank you.
Thank you.
Very briefly, please. I'm not sure I followed everything you said, Tina. You got by me pretty quickly. But are you assuming that the early childhood council is going to be implemented, because my understanding is the current co-chair's budget does not move money together. It keeps it where it is. And how do those two issues go together?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, that is true at this point. I think it's a bit in flux. I fully expect that given if the governor is successful, there will be at least an early learning council structure. It is part of his broader goal around the Education Investment Board, which had its first hearing in the Senate yesterday. I guess there's a likelihood that the Early Learning Council wouldn't come together at all, and then I would still like to have this bill in Ways and Means to continue to talk about a tighter structure for the commission system. In terms of the funding, I don't think that's been determined. I think there's an interest in not moving too many dollars over the Early Learning Council because the design has not been done yet. I think it's primarily around those funding streams that are currently in the state commission budget.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Representative Boone, do you have? I know both bills are open. Do you want to come up and testify? Come on.
And Madam Chair, I'd like to say to the audience and those, it's not my desire to be abrupt. I think it's just a matter of the speed at which the session is moving. However, this is a place for us to talk. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32. And I'm going to take a little different tack here. That's the first I've heard of that, and I'm a little shell-shocked myself because I've worked in this sector since the 70s, and with my primary purpose being primary prevention of child abuse. I took 10 years to work in the system treatment, and that just about killed me for obvious reasons. So I went back and worked with our former governor McCall's sister, Jean Babson, McCall Babson, and the original Oregon Coalition on Youth, I can't remember what it's called, Commission on Youth that her brother set up. And the purpose was to work in primary prevention of child abuse, because at that time you couldn't prove it, and that was our hardest and biggest hurdle, was to prove that prevention works. We're complaining about the increased level of childhood delinquency, was the term at the time. We didn't have Oregon Youth Authorities. We just warehoused our children. And a lot of them had mental issues, but a lot of them were terribly abused and neglected, and our purpose was to try to solve that problem. And obviously it was a big problem. And we moved forward to create the first Oregon chapter for the Committee on Prevention of Child Abuse. It was a nationwide organization out of Chicago. And I sat on that for years, and I went to so many conventions and conferences on forensics, et cetera, on the worst of the worst, and it was devastating. And so I tried to put my efforts into community-based, family-supportive programs, both faith-based and government programs. And I'm kind of likening what I'm hearing today to the watershed council system in this state. And we had eventually built up to 90 watershed councils in this state to implement the governor's program to support the trying to eliminate Oregon's having to list the coho. Now, I've got your attention. What do fish have to do with kids? But the point is that obviously a lot of the watershed council activity was in the rural areas. And in order to have a watershed council, you had to have a group. You had to formalize your group. And most of them had coordinators. And a lot of people do a lot of things voluntarily, but there was a point, because it takes a lot of time. So they were paid coordinators, and they got their money by writing grants to OWEB, Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, for money to pay for, yes. But my point is coming, so pay attention there. And that's what I'm hearing here, is that the same thing happened as Representative Thompson brought this up. And it's all about the money. It's all about the professional grant writers who could produce the best product. And I hate to see us dismantle these community groups who are doing good work and in our communities, and particularly our rural communities, who don't have the resources. And I guess you have this packet, or you may get it later, but a good point is made by Boys and Girls Aid, and then you go further. There's a kid from one of the rural nonprofits providing these services. These kids are not bad enough in some cases to get into the system at that level. But the local community groups are helping them. And the point is to keep them safe, get them through their schooling years, and get them, you know, have them have a decent life. And that's what, you know, avoid getting into the OAU system. And I'm sitting here just shaking inside, thinking this is getting so complicated, so number-oriented, so dollar-oriented, and you're going to see our limited dollars going to pay people to write the best possible grants, competitive grants, and what happens to those in the rural areas and in the areas, and I'm not leaving cities out, but what happens to those programs, those nonprofits, who just don't have those resources, but who are providing a good service for our kids, keeping them safe, helping them get their counseling services they need to keep them in school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess my point is that it's important. We have a really good opportunity here to utilize these services, and most of them are voluntary at this point. But don't cut their hands off. Don't cut out the commissions. My commissions in my area do great work. These people spend a lot of time, and it's voluntary time. They're working people. They care about these kids, and they want their families to be successful, because it's in all of our best interest.
Madam Chair, may I respond briefly?
Yes.
I absolutely agree and respect the comments from Representative Boone about the value of the local commissions. I just want to point out, if we're not dealing with the 3256 issue of the grant issue, but just around the Early Learning Council, my assumption is, at this point, there is no assumption that there will be a state commissioner or a local commission structure in the second half of the biennium, as far as I understand, in the early learning design discussion. Now, that could change, but I have not received any other kind of indication that is the case. So with this proposal, I believe it recognizes the value of the local commissions and gives them an opportunity in the first half of biennium to make sure they are part of that system discussion in a very creative and intentional way. Because if what I hear is people support the Early Learning Council proposal and the idea of refocusing on 0 to 5. If that is the case, we in the state will probably not afford both systems. They have to be integrated. So the question is, how is that going to happen? And again, I will apologize for the quickness with which I have brought this and kind of the pull-off-the-Band-Aid approach. But that is the reality that we are dealing with in this budget environment. We have a lot of systems and a lot of programs that will be underfunded or eliminated. And I think we have to have a very intentional conversation of how we're going to make the best of this situation. So, yes, it is about the money, but it's also maintaining the value of what is actually working.
Okay. I just can't believe how this morning is gone, and I'm really apologetic. I had no idea these hearings would be so many people. And we have still 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 people are wanting to testify on these two bills. And what I'd ask is some of these people have already testified, and so if you haven't already testified on the first commission bill, thank you. Colleagues, I'm going to take a minute and talk with you. We had several bills on here that I'm not sure we're going to have time to even have a public hearing on. 2459, which would add employees or volunteers to the people who need to report child abuse. It's a very important hearing. I want to have that, but I don't think we're going to have time this morning. And another one that would require the court to provide custody to a child 14 years of age who would have a choice of which parent they want to go to, which will also be a very important hearing. I think with 15 minutes left, unless people can stay on, although we have caucus, don't we, at 10 after 10. So it's looking like we're not going to have time to hear these. And I'm open to any other suggestion, but I feel like since we've got these two bills open and we have people from out of town that we need to have them testify. Any other suggestions or thoughts, Representative?
If we don't hear these bills today?
We will carry them over and hear them another time.
Okay.
Any other thoughts or suggestions?
Madam Chair?
Yes,
one of our representatives.
Representative Garrett?
Harker.
Harker. Well, the Chris's.
One of the Chris's.
Yes, one of the Chris's.
Next. The only other thought I have is that based on how House Bill 3256 has changed dramatically, much of the testimony that walked into the room might not pertain. I don't want to make that decision for people, but...
And we will have another hearing on that so that people will be able to come back and talk about the amended version.
Good.
Does that work for you?
Yes.
Representative Greenmike.
I was just going to suggest you have a couple of reps in the area. You might want to open up those hearings and let them testify and get it out of the way.
Okay. All right.
But they might not.
Would you rather come back since you're both in the building? We'll carry these over and have the hearings at another time. If you want, I can close this hearing now, have you talk on your bills, and then we'll have further hearings later.
Madam Chair, you can roll 3444 over.
Okay, we'll do that.
And I'm glad to try to come back. I just missed 3 work sessions in revenue today, and I'm not sure that they will keep excusing me.
What would you like, Representative Gelser?
And it's fine if we don't carry the bill over at all.
We can hear you. I'd be glad to take a recess on this. So we'll take a temporary recess. How do we do this? Close the public hearings on 3256 and 3260 and open up a hearing on
2459.
Sorry, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be extremely brief. House Bill, I'm Sarah Gelser from House District 16 in Corvallis. House Bill 2459 would expand the list of mandatory reporters of child abuse. Kind of building on the discussion that we had before, it is absolutely critical that when people suspect child abuse, they report it. And I think one thing that I wanted to be sure to get on the record, when you're looking at that data and that information about unsubstantiated allegations of abuse following reports, it's important to remember who some of those children are that are unsubstantiated. In 2007, we passed Carly's Law, which was about a little girl, not quite 3 years years old who was brutally murdered by her mother's boyfriend. She had two unsubstantiated allegations of abuse that were investigated in her case in the 9 months leading up to her death. Both of those were unsubstantiated. Clearly, she was profoundly abused. House Bill 2459 attempts to close two holes in our mandatory reporting statute. The first, it would bring in employees and volunteers of organizations that are providing youth services. These are individuals that have very close and confident relationships with young people and may be in a position to receive disclosures from them about child abuse. This came to my attention as I was reading about the issues unfolding with the Boy Scouts of America. Oregon is one of the few states in which Boy Scout troop leaders and Girl Scout troop leaders are not included in the mandatory reporting statutes. And in the case of Oregon, there were troop leaders that were going to their kind of higher up people in the volunteer organization, letting them know about abuse that they were aware of within the organization, and people higher up in the organization were asking them not to report the abuse, telling them that they did not need to because they were not subject to the mandatory child abuse reporting. I think that that is a significant problem where the lack of compulsion to report really harmed a whole bunch of Oregon kids. The second group that this would apply to is any organization that is providing prenatal or pregnancy care to individuals. People, a young person might walk in to a pregnancy care center, a pregnancy option center, sometimes they are called, and they may expect that it's a medical provider or is covered by the HIPAA laws. They actually are not. There are no requirements to maintain confidentiality, and those individuals are also not required to disclose abuse. So a young woman may come in and say, I'm pregnant with my father's baby. She might be 15 years old, and that person is not obligated, is not included in the mandatory reporting statute because the individuals that staff those organizations are not medical care professionals. They are simply volunteers that talk to them, and it would be important that abuse be reported. So that is this bill. I'm happy to provide you other information another time or continue working on this in the interim.
Thank you very much, Representative. Sorry that we weren't able to get to you sooner. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2459, and we will hear this in the future. We're going to carry that over. Let me make sure I wrote that down. Okay, and we're also carrying over House Bill 3444. And and I will reopen the hearings on House Bill 3256 and 3260. And we have several people who have not had a chance to testify. Janet Arends, Mike Balter, Peggy Cahan.
Everybody is, and we should be all watching.
And then after that, we've got Dan Klein.
Good question.
People who shouldn't be.
Marilyn Harrison, Robert somebody, begins with a D. Okay. Thank you for waiting. Glad to see you.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Janet Arends. I'm
the
executive director of the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs. I want to thank co-chairs and the committee members for allowing us to provide a few comments today.
But we'll wait a minute. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
The Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs requested this bill in order to make sure that we have a home for the homeless youth of Oregon. You're receiving packets with a fair amount of information. Representative Boone referenced them. I'll allow you, feel free to take a look at that. I'm not going to cover those materials. In 2005, legislation was passed that established the development of a statewide runaway and homeless youth system. That system was placed inside the Oregon Commission of Children and Families. Its primary purpose was to keep youth safe, to return them to their families whenever possible, and also to keep them in school. Currently, as Representative Kotek already outlined, that it's currently in the commission and we're looking for a new home. The second piece of paper on your packet is a letter from the State Commission to the Legislative Assembly indicating that this system does need to move. The original bill is basically a cut and paste that has been placed in the Dash 1 amendments. We're supportive of Representative Kotek's comments and concepts around developing some dash twos that would streamline some of the requirements for any state agency that might take this population on. And regarding the state agency, Department of Human Services has not had an opportunity to be involved in any vigorous discussion about whether or not this is a good match and what the needs for that state agency would be able to take on this population. It's important that they have an opportunity to participate in such a conversation. So without getting too far ahead of ourselves, we did feel a sense of urgency to try and have this matter deliberated by your committee before the possibility of going into the Early Learning Council, where we don't think there's a very good match, and we think we do have a good solution. Just one. Yes.
Thank you. Mike?
Okay, I'm Mike Baltrow with Boys and Girls Aid. We've been providing a rollout site in Washington County for the last 6 years through this funding. First thing I want to say is that I think the money has been successful. You'll see the results in a testimony that I provided. I'm not going to go over those, but that's number one. I think the second thing is these are young people who have never really had a home. Boys and Girls Aid has been serving these kids for 125 years, since 1885, and there's not been a state agency who's really owned these kids. We finally thought we had them with a commission. The commission actually then, in the cut process, said that they were no longer going to be the home for these kids. I think DHS is probably the right place. I don't think we've crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's in getting that transfer worked through. What I can tell you is that these are the not enough kids. They're not abused enough to be in DHS through the protective service. They're not dependent enough to be in DHS because people think that they can fend for themselves. They're not delinquent enough to be in OYA yet. And yet the bills that you're going to hear about sexual exploitation start with these girls. These are the girls who run away from home and are found by adult men. And so if you're serious about finding a home for these kids, help us with working out the details and the transfer to DHS.
Thank you, Mike. Go ahead.
Good morning, members of the council and Representatives Gilliam and Talai. My name is Peggy Kahan, and I'm Program Director of Community Action Agency's Home, Youth, and Resource Center. Home provides day shelter in Salem to more than 200 at-risk and homeless teens each month and is Marion County's rollout site for runaway and homeless youth services. I just want to speak also to this population of young people who are typically ignored, neglected, underfunded, misunderstood, even here in our state. And yet, just a few years ago, with very few dollars, our state started these rollout sites for runaway and homeless youth, and they've been incredibly successful in their meeting their objectives, leveraging dollars, and helping the children and families in our state. I just would strongly urge you, well, I've worked with at-risk and homeless teens for 18 years here in Salem, and I've never seen a program that had the impact that this rollout site has had in our community for youth, the families, and the community partners. And I know the other rollout sites have found the same impact with, again, very few dollars. And I urge you to support this move to DHS. I hope it'll help solidify our home for many years and continue services as well as continue to be funded. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. Dan Krein, is it? And pardon? Marilyn Harrison and Robert, whose last name begins with a D. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm Dan Krein, and I'm the juvenile director for Tillamook County. And this morning, I'm here in my capacity as the representative for the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association. I serve on the State Commission for Children and Families as the juvenile department representative. I also, in my role as a state commissioner, have been the chair of the subcommittee on runaway and homeless youth. And as pointed out by the previous folks testifying, it's moving to a new home as it needs to do. And it's timed with all of the discussion that you heard earlier about separating early childhood programming from those for youth. And I'm not going to go over specifically what's in the white paper from the Directors Association, although the message really is this makes the most sense because we believe that DHS has some responsibility for these kids. It's been pointed out that there are kids that take off from foster care or that age out of the foster system that are part of this runaway and homeless population, so it's important. What I am going to talk about, because I know you appreciate this, and if you hear emotion in my voice, it's because I have passion for this, because I've been a juvenile department person for 27 years, so I have that professional life, and I've raised two children of my own, and I've also raised four other kids that were runaway and homeless kids that just happened to make it through my house. And where my passion comes from for this population is that I was one of these kids before any of these kids were recognized as runaway and homeless youth. Did the couch float thing, was raised by parents of friends, taken in by a grandparent for a while, which happens a lot these days, and the most important part of this discussion this morning is that these kids and the services for these kids have a home. Because what's finally happened in Oregon is there are eight sites that are serving thousands of children with very little money. I would wager on a per capita basis the most efficient system in the state as far as bang for the buck. And that these kids have a place, they get services, they get reconnected if they're not connected at school, so they graduate, which is really important, which is how I ended up at Grandma's house. Is she showed up and said, "You're going to graduate from high school." You know, bless your heart, Grandma. And these kids, there's leaders amongst them. There's future folks sitting in your chair among them. And right now, we're closer than we've ever been to a system in Oregon to serve these kids. And in a crisis time, budgetarily, which we are, when we're focusing on all these populations, that we not ignore this particular population that is probably one of the most ignored in the state, even though if you go outside and go like six blocks from here, one of the most visible in the state.
Right.
And assure you that based on my experience in working in three counties in Oregon, there are homeless and runaway kids in Tillamook, where I live. There are homeless and runaway kids in Harney County and Lake County and Umatilla County. They're everywhere.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate
Thank you.
What you do. Go ahead.
Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee, my name is Bill Thomas. I'm Director of the Washington County Commission on Families. Marilyn Harrison had to leave, so I will very briefly speak to three points that our commission had been concerned about. 3256 as introduced, one, competitive grants has already been discussed by Representative Thompson and others. The second, that local commissions focus on more than child abuse prevention and juvenile crime prevention. We focus on runaway and homeless youth. We focus on school success. That is why we had supported the three broader purposes that are specified in House Bill 3570. And the third was we wanted to maximize these community services and thought the proposal of the -3 amendments of saying that 95% of funds should pass to the local commissions made more sense than the 10% limitation that was proposed in 3256. In light of Representative Kotek's comments this morning, though, there is much to offer in that. I think that our commission would be strongly supportive of urging the committee to move forward with 3570 and yet finding the vehicle to have the discussion, the policy discussion that Representative Kotek has suggested. The AOC had adopted a proposal that local commissions should be the foundation, the building blocks for the early learning council at the local level to have that community involvement and support, whether they're 336 local commissions or whether those commissions may be regionalized under 190 agreements, however that could occur. But I would offer one caution. In the proposal of saying, well, let's take 0 to 5 here and we'll put youth investment here, is that we're in danger of creating more silos. What local commissions have done, what they have done for really 30 years since juvenile services commissions were created in the 1970s, is have one home in local communities that could focus on children birth to 18. That is the tremendous value. That is why we have supported runaway and homeless youth programs in Washington County, and they've been so successful, just as our after-school programs and our summer food programs and our family resource centers. Most of those programs are not age-limited. They are not just a 0 to 5 program. that we have family resource centers in 7 school districts, and that we do summer food, and we do healthy kids outreach, and we develop school-based health centers that serve elementary and preschool kids as well. So we have to be careful about not creating the thing that we want to try to get away from, which is further fragmentation. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much. Thank you for bringing your insight. Thank you all. Now, I saw some faces here of people who did not sign up. I tried to hear everybody who signed up. Was there anyone who didn't sign up who wants to speak very quickly? Come. Well, you already know. No, you already signed up. I already heard you. Sorry. Anybody who, I see some faces of people who did not speak. And please give us written information. As you can see, our time is over. Yeah. Just give us, and he will give it to us. Thank you all for coming. I know these are important issues you are very invested in and have been invested in years, and we hope to be proceeding through some difficult times. Thank you. With that, I will I know that. I've got to close just a minute. Okay. I'm closing the public hearing on 3256 and 3260. Okay. Closing the public hearing on House Bill 3256.
It was just a public hearing. There was no 3260. We didn't have a work session.
I'm going to carry over the work session on 3260.
The goal would be that it gets a work session.
Possible work session on 2237.
Agree whether or not to schedule
and possible work session on 3256. Oh, and the public hearing on 3256.
See you too.
Okay. Now, what? I already did that pick. I already carried that over.
I'm not agreeing to that carryover. I didn't mean to say that. But I just wanted to, just, have to clarify.
Well, we put it on the agenda, so we had, either we had to hear it or carry it over.
No, you don't have to carry it over. You can say we're not hearing. We're not carrying it over.
I already said I carried it over, and that's why I'm sticking to it. So.
Well.
You can come out of recess.
Okay. I close the Human Services Committee on Wednesday, April 6th. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.